Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It is FBC Radio Live. It is May the 3rd. It's Wednesday. That's right. And we got some more NFL news breaking this morning. And I kind of say that a little bit of sarcasm because, as you and I talked about, John, when we were right before we got on the air, one of the more least surprising moves of the offseason, aside from Aaron Rodgers eventually getting traded to the Jets, was Randall Cobb joining him with the New York Jets. And let me throw this out to you, John. What if, after not being able to win another Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers goes out and wins a Super Bowl with essentially half the same offense with the New York Jets? How do you think Packers fans will feel? And mind you, there's a good portion of them already a little, I don't want to say upset, but possibly a little bit annoyed that he's really taken full force this role with the Jets and showing up to OTAs and things he really hasn't done too much the last couple seasons.
Yeah, showing up to OTAs, seemingly very engaged, especially at the original, kickoff press conference last week. I remember 2 years ago when he showed up in camp and it was his airing of grievances for a 45-minute press conference, which was wildly entertaining. But if you're a executive with the Packers or a fan of the Packers, you're like, what the hell is this guy doing? Now he brings in Randall Cobb, which is no great loss for Green Bay because I don't think they were looking at him being any factor this year. They had already signed Alan Lazard, the Jets did, a month or so ago. And I'm just waiting for Mercedes Lewis, the ancient tight end, who is going to join the Jets at some point. In fact, Shannon Sharp had a great line when he talked about Mercedes Lewis. He goes, everybody in the league calls me Unc. The only one that calls me Bra is Mercedes Lewis because he's so damn old.
Yeah.
That's going to happen, right? Yeah, we see Aaron Rodgers sitting courtside at Madison Square Garden taking in the Knicks. And I know he is a basketball fan. He owns 1% of the Milwaukee Bucks, grew up a Sacramento Kings fan. But imagine if it had been Bucks, Knicks in round two. Like, what's he going to do? Go back and forth and sit front row for all the games, whether it's in Milwaukee, New York, and what hat's he going to wear? What team's he going to cheer for? He is 1% owner of the Bucks.
Yeah, on a side note, you know how it's kind of funny that there are many more older players in the league this year than there were in years before because Tom Brady's no longer available. Because that was always kind of like,
right.
you'd be like, oh, Aaron Rodgers old, but he's not Tom Brady. Like, Tom's got like 10 years on him, or not really, but you know what, it's close, but
yep.
It's kind of like when he left the Patriots, all of a sudden you're like, oh man, Julian Edelman is old. Like,
yeah.
When the hell did he get old? And it's like, well, the average age kind of dropped a little bit when Brady left. But yeah, to your point, it's look, this is exactly what Rodgers had to do, going to a new team. So I don't know if it's necessarily surprising, but you said it before we got on the air. He's a bit of a troll, He knows what's going on. He knows the chatter. He knows, some people are, maybe a little bit upset. And look, I mean, we all kind of suspected that maybe, the last couple of years in Green Bay, last year especially, I don't know about his MVP years, but certainly last year was a season where, again, he just wasn't fully engaged. And look, I mean, who knows what the reason was, whether it was physical ailments combined with frustration with the organization or what have you. But he's full on Jet right now. And I think it might upset some Packers fans down the road, especially if they win. I don't know if there's going to be as many Rodgers Packers fans happy for Aaron Rodgers as there were Patriots Brady fans happy for Brady, who won with Tampa Bay, because that was fairly, it was fairly cut and dry, his departure. It wasn't like there wasn't a long drawn out, like, I know there was obviously discussion about the contract in that last season, but there was nothing like there was with Aaron Rodgers and the kind of facing off with the organization. I think the coverage wanted it to happen. They wanted this to be some like deep-seated hatred between Belichick and Brady. And the reality of it was he was a free agent. He left. There was no, there wasn't this, like, animosity between the organization, or at least that's my belief. I feel like a lot of those talking points were a little bit, I don't know, exaggerated a bit. And I think, we know how the news cycle is with sports, and it's 24/7. The good thing with Aaron Rodgers is he airs these things out publicly, so we know these like little spats he's had with management, or at least we can read between his passive aggressive messages. Let's just put it that way.
So you don't think if Rodgers wins the Super Bowl with the Jets this year that he's going back to Green Bay with the Lombardi Trophy?
No,
you don't think that's going to happen the way Ray Bourque did when he went to Colorado and won the Stanley
Cup? I was there. Look, that was the absolute, just on a side note, that was the absolute bottom of the barrel I could have ever gotten as a Boston sports fan. Because to that point, John, in my life, I had seen nothing but failure. I was born in 1986 amidst the Bucky Dent.
You were born during the 86 World Series.
What's that?
Oh, boy. You were born during the 86 World Series, right?
Exactly. And so I said Bucky Dent. I don't know what I just was watching. For some reason, I saw that highlight and I had that stuck in my head. But I was born in 86. This was after the Celtics obviously won their last title before 2008. It was during the World Series against the Mets. So, you know, there was a lot of pain leading up to that point. And then, you know, celebrating a player, like, not just like, oh, right, I'm very happy for Ray Bourque, but like going to like a parade for Ray Bourque, winning a Stanley Cup for another team. And, you know, looking back.
And he beat your favorite goaltender, right?
Yes, correct. So I was very conflicted there. But, you know, a mere, 9 months later, Patriots win their first Super Bowl, and just now we're starting to get to the unfortunate, possibly down years in Boston sports. But you know, I'm not ready to go to that yet. But anyways, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Look, I don't think the Jets are going to win the Super Bowl. I you know, obviously I'm a fan of Aaron Rodgers. I think he's going to improve the Jets. I think they're going to be competitive, but I don't think this is a Tom Brady to Tampa Bay situation. When it comes down to it, that year that the Bucs won the Super Bowl, they had to go through a gauntlet of playoff opponents. And, you know, look, you'll sit there and say, well, the first one, Washington's defense was pretty good, and they gave them a fight. But obviously Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and then Patrick Mahomes, and those three teams, that they like, that's something that's like, I don't think gets enough credit, not to mention the fact that they averaged 30 points a game. Do I see the Jets doing something similar? Absolutely not. And that's
all on the road, too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And played all road games.
On the road. Now, granted, obviously, this was just as people were starting to get back to stadiums and actually have a road crowd, you know what I mean, in the NFL. Obviously, the Super Bowl was, you know, in Tampa, so it essentially turned into a home game for them. But, I don't see that happening for the Jets. I think they're going to have a good season. I just don't think it's going to end in a Super Bowl because, you know, look, I mean, there's a lot of circumstances that led to why, you know, the Packers didn't win a Super Bowl. And part of it is Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it's not a huge, like, there's a lot of other issues, and I'm not putting this all on Aaron Rodgers, but you know what I mean. We've talked about this before. When push comes to shove, there were times when, well, he didn't play to his up to his ability and up to his standard to get them back to a Super Bowl. So,
he plays better in 2014 against Seattle and 2020 against Tampa. They go to the Super Bowl and maybe he has three instead of one. Yeah, I mean, it's on him. I mean, his major Achilles heel has been the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at his regular season numbers are ridiculous. His playoff numbers are ridiculous. His one trip to the Super Bowl, he was MVP, was great. That NFC Championship game, even the one he won, he wasn't very good against the Bears. I mean, he's got 9 touchdowns and 8 interceptions in 5 NFC Championship games.
Yeah.
This is a guy whose touchdown interception ratio is like 4.75-1.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous, right, but shows up in the NFC Championship game and it's like, what happened? But yeah, no, look, for him to do what Brady did, he'd have to be some quarterback in the first round and then Joe Burrow in the divisional round and then Mahomes in the conference championship game and then show up against Jalen Hurts or someone like that in the Super Bowl to accomplish what Brady did in terms of going up against those other great quarterbacks. So it's going to be a tough, tough road, but sure going to be fun to watch it.
Yeah, no, and look, I'm here for the drama. I'm here for the storylines every week. I'm here for Mike Greenberg on SportsCenter emotionally collapsing and getting way too high or way too low. Look, I knock on a lot of people, like broadcasters, because I think a lot of them are, you know, performance artists more than analysts. But I appreciate Mike Greenberg's commitment to the Jets, lifelong commitment to the Jets, despite the utter failure of the franchise for, well, his entire life. So I kind of, and in his role as kind of like the host and someone, you know, I'm okay with him being like a fan. Like I kind of enjoy it. It makes it fun watching the show. excuse me. So it'll be interesting to see that. And again, it's a season long story that we're going to be watching, whether it fails or not. I mean, that's the thing, John, they could suck and it's still going to be a story.
This is the story of the NFL this year.
Yeah,
right?
Oh yeah, sure.
The lead story.
Because, absolutely.
First of all, drama and Aaron Rodgers are perfect together, right?
He kind
of craves it, and then obviously pushes back and says, you know, why is everyone talking about me? But he loves this. So, yeah, and it's in New York.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, exactly.
For a franchise that has the longest playoff drought of any professional team in all of the United States and Canada. So, yeah, this is going to be fascinating to watch, and it's just starting, and just, again, Mercedes Lewis will be next, and maybe Jordy Nelson leaves the farm, comes out of retirement, and joins Aaron Rodgers in New York.
Yeah, maybe James Jones. He's a big fan of Aaron Rodgers. He hasn't played in years, you know. Maybe he'll come out. You know, maybe
Greg Jennings.
Eddie Lacy. I don't know. Is he still? How long has it been since he was in the league?
Well, Eddie Lacy's probably 350 pounds at this
probably.
Point.
He could play left tackle.
Maybe he will. Yeah, why not? You know, some of those guys, isn't it strange with football players? They either, after they retire, balloon to the size of like 350, 375, or they shrink.
The ironic thing is
40 pounds lighter than when he was playing.
Well, it's like offensive linemen shrink.
Yes.
Like, they become like...
Thomas looked normal. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, granted now, I mean, they just spent the last, what, 10, 12 years of their life forcing food down their throats and everything like that. So, Lakers won, Joel Embiid, all that stuff. We're going to talk NBA, but we spent too much time on Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson, of course. I mean, we always do that.
He ruins everything.
He does. He ruins everything. So I don't want to keep the voice of Full Press Hockey patiently waiting, or I don't want to keep him waiting any longer than we've had already, because he has been patient. So, Jim, good morning. And by God, if you say anything overly negative about the Bruins, I might lose it today.
What has been said already about the Bruins that I can add to it? I think Brad Marchand summed it up perfectly yesterday in their media availability when he said that they shouldn't have been in that position.
Yeah.
And they know it. He knows it. Every player knows it, that series should have been over in 5 games. And he even said, game 7, a minute left, we got to get the puck out of the zone. Game 6, we have to play better defensively. Like, things we wouldn't normally say about the Bruins all year is what we're saying now. And it's kind of shocking, to be honest.
Well, John and I talked about this a little bit either yesterday. Yeah, it had to have been Monday. They just turned into the exact opposite. Like I said, going into the into the postseason, I told you multiple times. I'm ashamed of myself. I was so confident because, whatever. But I thought this was a team that was about to go on a 16-5 type run to the cup, because again, in hindsight, looking back, it sounds foolish for me to have been so confident, but the reality of it was there was no indication that they were gonna play this way. All of a sudden, it wasn't necessarily the offense that was the issue, like last year and certainly against St. Louis, where they just couldn't put the puck in the net. Their defense just imploded, and that includes goaltending. I didn't think, he was in a tough position going into game 7. I didn't think Jeremy Swayman was good enough. I thought he gave up the first and the tying goal late in the third period, I thought were very, very soft. And people are like, what about, well, the third goal, da, da, da. He was out of position. He wasn't against the post tight enough. And that allowed, the deflection to go in. Regardless of that puck's deflected, he should have been in position to stop that. And I thought the overtime goal, he just wasn't ready for. He was too deep in the crease, and that's that. And look, you can't, you can't blame him for being cold, but, at a certain point, you just got to sit there and say this was a total defensive failure, and that includes goaltending as well.
I agree with that. I think defensively, you know, getting pucks out, turnovers, uncharacteristic mistakes that we didn't see from the Bruins all year. We saw in game seven and late in that series, especially game five. Now, we're, you know, Brad Marchand buries that puck in the third period in game five. We're not talking about this right now. But they didn't. And, you know, it's a shame. But if Linus Ullmark is as hurt as he says he was or didn't say, and Kevin Weeks is reporting, and what a lot of people talked it in, I know Patrice Bergeron wants to play. I know he was dealing with a herniated disc, this, that, and other thing. But you have to realize that this team was playing well without them in the lineup, and I'm just not sure that that was the right decision to make. I might have gone to Swayman in game five just because of the edge and on home ice and everything like that. But again, Ullmark played well in game five. It's not like he didn't play well, and he didn't play, and he played well all series.
Yeah.
I was really shocked by the goalie change. I thought it was a panic move by Jim Montgomery, and I thought I would have just stayed with Ullmark. If Ullmark struggled early, I would have moved him. I personally, what I would have done, game six, with that high scoring affair, do what Edmonton did in game four with LA. Pull Skinner, put Jack Campbell in, see if you can get guys settled down. That's what I would have done in game six. Pull Ullmark and put Swayman in there.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because again, you got to the point where they missed their opportunity. If they were going to really make a goalie change, they missed that opportunity, because like I said right before, it's an impossible spot to be in, to go in and try to make your playoff debut, you know, aside from the 3 minutes that he filled in when Ullmark got knocked out in game seven in a series that all the pressure's on you. You know, this wasn't, you know, the Bruins coming back down 3-1. This was them being up 3-1, blowing this lead. And yeah, I'll be interested to see what the ultimate diagnosis is with Ullmark. Because he played well, yes, but he definitely did not look right. Like, just watching, you could tell something was off. And I don't think it was necessarily a confidence issue. There were multiple times where it seemed like he was getting up a little bit slow. He seemed a little labored. He wasn't quite as sharp positionally, in this series. And I think that's a huge thing, because for a guy like Ullmark, I mean, he's a positionally sound goaltender. You know, he's always going to be in position. And that's why, you know, he's not necessarily going to make the spectacular flailing save, because he's never really out of position that much. Yeah, it's disappointing. I am encouraged, though, and John is our resident old guy here. You know, he's up there in age. But when it comes to hockey age, Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci are obviously up there. But they indicated that there wasn't necessarily a clear decision one way or the other than they're either going to retire or play for the Boston Bruins. So, I'll ask you, Jim, first, and then I'll ask John. Maybe he'll have a different gut instinct. Do you think that either one of those or both of them come back next season?
I'm going to start with Krejci. I think Krejci comes back one more year, just because Pasternak's there, Sokka's there, he's got teammates there. The Czech line was really good this year. Those guys had great chemistry. That's my gut on him. I think Bergeron is retiring. I just don't think he comes back another year. I think this was the year to win it for Bergie. I think this was the Bergeron, like, we're got to go win it. Now, could Bergeron get that Tom Brady, like, inside of him and be like, this is not the way I want to go out? Unfortunately, not everybody goes out winning a Stanley Cup. There's only a handful of guys that can do that. But would it shock me if he comes back? No, but I just think the way everything went down in game seven, at the end of it, with the hugs, taking every teammate, it feels like Bergeron's done.
I will say this before I let John give his gut instinct. He did that last year, too. I know. I'm digging deep for any sort of positive spin. Like, trust me, I'm far more... I'm much more in the camp that I think Krejci more than Bergeron, but I'm just, at this point, I'm holding out hope. So, John, what does your gut say? Krejci and Bergeron, both, neither, one or the other?
I'm going to have to put this out the poll, right? Because it's four possibilities. That's perfect for Twitter. I want them to have at least eight possibilities on these polls, but they don't listen to me for some apparent reason. But when you look at the money, how is it going to work? Because they played on the cheap this year, but now you're going to have them on the books next year. If they both retire, you're still technically paying these guys next year in terms of your salary cap. So how would that work? Can you kick the can down the road yet again? I mean, I'm not knowledgeable enough on the salary cap in the NHL to really get into that. The other thing is, look, it was admirable that Patrice Bergeron played 78 regular season games and played more minutes this year than he has in any of the last six seasons. But can you load manage these guys? I mean, you got one extreme or the other, whereas hockey players never want to sit. Basketball players, some of them don't want to play. Can you get a happy medium? Maybe Bergeron and Krejci play 60 games. You give some young players a chance to grow a little bit. This way they're fresher when you get to the postseason.
No, look, it's a good point, especially for, excuse me, a player like his. But, you know, in this particular case, in this season, it was tough. I don't necessarily blame them for not putting more emphasis on resting them, because for the most part, Bergeron was healthy all season until the end. And look, the going for the record and kind of having that special regular season, I think, is important. And I said on Monday, it's gonna take some time before myself and other Bruins fans can truly appreciate that type of season, because again, it didn't end in, well, any playoff success at all. So that's going to be a tough pill to swallow down the road. But, you know, I still think there's a lot of things to be proud of and to really celebrate about this franchise and what they did this season, because they didn't win, it doesn't make it 100% failure. There's a lot of disappointment in it, but, but I think next season, if they do come back, I think that would be a priority, John, because look, they've already seen what can happen if they win the most games. At this point, it doesn't matter. They can finish first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh, or eighth. As long as they make the playoffs, that's really where the season starts, and the judgment will start for this Bruins team moving forward. And to answer your question, I think if they were to come back, I don't think either of them are going to be looking for any sort of deal other than what they got this year. The only problem for the Bruins is they are very, very tight up against the cap, and they have a lot of decisions to make, one of which, and before we move on to some of these second-round teams, one of which I think is Tyler Bertuzzi. And, Jim, I think he should be a priority for this Bruins team.
I agree. I mean, the fact that, like, they went out and got him because Nick Foligno and Taylor Hall were hurt at the deadline, he wasn't really on their radar. But what he's come in, he's a typical Bruin. He's a perfect fit for this team. But the problem is the salary cap. What is he going to want? If he goes over $5 million, well, forget it. He's not coming back. They have to figure out term, and they have to figure out AAV. His playoff performance alone will get him a nice little bump in salary because of what he did. Him, Taylor Hall, Pasternak really carried this team in the playoffs this year. And you know, usually we don't say that too much about the Bruins and their depth scoring. Usually it's like, well, it's the top line and where's everybody else? Well, this year it was everybody else. Where was the top line? And I know guys were injured and not playing well, but still, it's usually you want everything going at once. But I think Tyler Bertuzzi should come back. I think he's a perfect Bruin. Again, how do they make it work? They have other decisions to make as well. We talk about Bergeron, Krejci, how they're going to structure those deals. You have guys on defense who you're going to bring back. If you do bring back a guy like Bertuzzi, who's going to get traded, you know, speculation potentially, you know, I would hate to see that if Taylor Hall gets traded, but he might be a cap casualty because of his salary. But again, there's no indications on that yet, but you could be moving a guy on the back end that's making too much as well. There's so many decisions that this Bruin team has to make. You know, what do they do with their goaltending? I think their goaltending's fine. I don't think they're going to change anything. It would be very shocking if they did. But to me, Tyler Bertuzzi is a perfect fit for the Spoke to be in Boston. He just fits what he does. He's physical. He's got that Bruins mentality. and I like what he brings to the table. And it was a very, very good pickup by Don Sweeney at the deadline.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there's certainly if Bergeron and Krejci don't come back, this team is going to be different. They're going to lose some talent, but they're still a pretty solid team with what they have, and they have some work to do, no doubt about it. But they still have a lot of really nice pieces, and if Tyler Bertuzzi is part of the mix, then you know maybe those expectations shouldn't diminish too much moving forward, regardless of what happens. But all right, before we go, I do want to bring up what we have going on in the second round, because there was other hockey being played. I just had to have a little bit of therapy session there. As we all predicted, the Seattle Kraken, of course, advanced past the Colorado Avalanche. And, of course, they took a 1-0 lead in their second round series last night. The Devils, your Devils, as you can see up all on right. the on the wall, fall down 2-0 to the Rangers. But what can you say? Great goaltending down the stretch. I love great goaltending. I do. I'm biased towards it. And the Florida Panthers look like they're doing exactly what they did to the Bruins, to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So maybe, Bruins fans, this wasn't as bad of a loss as it seemed on paper, because lest we forget, the Florida Panthers were the President's Trophy winning team last year. So going into this second round, Jim, the favorites, the expectations have really been thrown upside down because the Bruins are out, the Avs are out. Who's the favorite?
It's north of the border. I think it's Edmonton, and I think it's Toronto. I mean, you saw it. Full Press Hockey's got it up. We know what the betting line favorites right now are the Edmonton Oilers and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the Dallas Stars are right behind them. I'm not shocked by it because Edmonton has the best offense remaining in the playoffs. Their defense has to get better, but their power play is ridiculous. Vegas, take notes. Stay out of the penalty box, because if you don't, well, the puck's going to end up in your back of your net. It's wild, though, that the road teams in the playoffs are 33-19. It's remarkable that the home team can't win a game. It's crazy, except in the Devils-Rangers series where the home team won the last three games of the series and the Devils are going on. And Akira Schmid was, what can you say when he came in? Game three, the Devils, you know, they had to make a goalie change. They weren't playing well. He brings confidence, calmness, zen-like in that position. And the Devils just play their game. Speed, fast, physical, you know, they just grind you down. The forecheck, relentless. And as you can see yesterday, teams that play game seven and only have a day off of rest, they're in hockey mode. I expect a similar result tonight. I know Carolina is a tough place to play for this Devils team, but they're going to get right back at it after they played Monday night. I think that's advantage New Jersey. Seattle, unbelievable. Well, first time they haven't scored the opening goal, but still, five different goal scorers in game one. Yanni Gourde with the overtime winner. They almost blow it. Joel Pavelski does it by himself in his return. Four goals.
Ridiculous.
Unreal. It's unreal what he did. And the tip-ins that he does is ridiculous. He's one of the best at tipping in pucks into the net, different angles, moving his body. You know, Ottinger didn't play great in the first period, but he settled down. A high-scoring affair. And Florida, look, if Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be this locked in as he was in the Bruins series, and he's putting the work in after practice, after the morning skates, locked in, the workload's just his, that's when he becomes a better goaltender. He's not a good goalie when he has to split time. If it's just him riding the workload and the number one guy going forward, Toronto's in a world of hurt, because when he's locked in like he was, and not to say Samsonov didn't play bad, but if he's locked in like he's been, man, Florida can make a run. And the Leafs fans are going to be in some pain again. Again, it's only game one. Hard to overreact. I figured the road teams would come out and steal game one just because you have the momentum of game seven. But Bobrovsky's played well. I think Toronto needs more from Nylander. They definitely need more from Marner. They got to get their identity back. What they did against Tampa, I think they were just so focused on Tampa. Now you can start focusing on Florida. But like you said, Florida was a President's Trophy winning team last year. I think this is what everybody expected this year. And we're seeing it in the playoffs. And sometimes you have to go through that adversity. You know, I say it with the Devils. you know, outside of 2003 when they were the number two team, you know, they usually won the cup from the four position. And yeah, they went to the cup final in 2001 as the number one in the East, but that team was so good and so dominant. They ran into a good Colorado team that year. But most of the time, these teams that win these cups outside of, you know, Chicago and 13 are in a, you know, they're not the number one seed. So maybe this is what Florida needed to get going. It's going to be interesting to see what we get game twos for that series. But, you know, Vegas got to stay out of the penalty box because Edmonton's power play is just so, so good.
Well, it's and that's the thing. That gives me hope for the Bruins that maybe. And I brought this up after the game. The last two teams to go out and win the most games in NHL history both lost before winning a cup, but then went on to win two Stanley Cups in a row. So I got some inner belief there, but it's funny that you brought up that 2001 team because John and I started the show talking about Ray Bourque winning a cup for another team and celebrating it as a Boston fan, so it was a little bit different. But yeah, look, I agree. Well, we sit there and say Toronto, you know, I watched last night's game and I'm sitting here thinking like, man, Florida looks like their shots are just finding the net. They're just, I mean, they're in the right place at the right time. Matthew Tkachuk is apparently always in the right place at the right time, just waiting to bury. Carter Verhaeghe is all of a sudden, like, you know, he's starting to find the net. Brandon Montour, I mean, he's just flicking pucks in from the blue line, and they're going in the net or creating scoring opportunities. So you're right. Toronto's got to figure out a way to get more scoring and play better in net, because I thought going into the Bruins series, the Panthers were obviously the lesser goal. Like, I thought Bobrovsky was pretty good. He wasn't great. I think he still only had like an 890 something save percent. I mean, it wasn't, the numbers were not there. Just timely saves. You can argue that going into this series, though, Samsonov versus Bobrovsky, that Florida has the advantage on paper, and you know, the margin for error is very slim for Toronto. And I think we saw that last night, because you have a team that, like you said, was coming right off that big seven, you know, game seven win, scoring in the final minute, scoring in overtime. And then all of a sudden you go to Toronto, who's been kind of, you know, they've been celebrating this playoff series win for a couple days now. All of a sudden they got to get back to work. So whether they caught him off guard or not, I guess we'll find out. But I do think that Florida's served notice to Toronto, and maybe, again, what we saw against the Bruins wasn't a fluke.
No, I don't think it was a fluke. Don't forget, Toronto had Florida on the ropes in the regular season. I believe it was in, I want to say, like a March game, end of March, maybe going into April. With a minute left, Florida ties it and then wins in overtime. If Florida had lost in regulation, they would have been 8 points out of the final wild card spot. Just think about that for a minute. Toronto had a chance to eliminate them at that point.
Damn Maple Leafs.
So, and we're not talking about this. But look, Toronto's just got to get back to what they did. They got to get greasy, grindy goals that they did against Tampa. The defense for Florida is a little bit better just because they're a little bit more physical in the slot. Tampa's defense is not what it was. When you don't have a Ryan McDonagh, an Eric Chernak, a Jan Ruda. Chernak was hurt, so he wasn't going to come back in the series. But Ruda's not there. McDonagh's not there. The Leafs found opportunities to get in the slot and shoot. You're not going to be able to find that opportunity. But you mentioned it. Shoot the puck. I watched the whole first period and the whole game with that Bruins game. You know, you and I were going back and forth on Twitter. What do we say? Shoot the puck. It's a novel concept, but it makes sense. Shoot the puck, good things happen when you shoot the puck and it goes on net. Brandon Montour, look, Matthew Tkachuk and Leon Draisaitl to me are two of the biggest playoff performers right now in the NHL. These guys step their game up when the bright lights, when it turns to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Tkachuk's an agitator. He carried this team in back-to-back 100-point seasons. It's a great pickup by Florida. And when you have Sam Bennett on that line too, he can agitate just as much. Now Toronto's got to deal with a heavy forecheck, get the puck out quickly. It's going to be tough, but they have the players that can do it. I think, you know, Toronto's not great in game one, so I think they'll bounce back in game two.
Well, between Matthew Tkachuk and Steph Curry, anytime I see someone viciously gnawing on a mouthpiece, it triggers me. So, yeah, I don't ever want to see that again. I'm good with that. So, well, Jim, thank you. John, thank you for waiting patiently in the back. I try, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk basketball today, but we'll do that tomorrow as, you know, hopefully the Celtics rebound tonight, literally and figuratively. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs roll on. I'm not quite sure if I have a specific rooting interest, but I'll tell you what, Jim, I got the Devils up there as a possibility because I'm a Bruins fan at heart, but you know, Marty Brodeur, man, I got a lot of love for that goalie. So I can always root for the Devils if it doesn't affect the Bruins. So with that said, though, thank you everyone for joining us, Jim. Thank you, voice of Full Press Hockey. Give him a follow at Jim Behringer, Behringer. I think I spelled that right. I went a little bit quick, but and then give us a follow at FPC Radio Live, and of course head over to FullPressCoverage.com and FullPressHockey.com to check out all the latest and greatest. So thank you, everyone, and we will talk to you tomorrow.